yourselves.
Quiet, please.
Ladies and gentlemen.
You ready for the big show?
In exactly 15 seconds, we'll be on the air.
Lars. This is the Lars Larson Show.
President Trump is one fat-ass president. He secured the border at the level we've never seen before.
Honestly provocative talk with Lars Larson.
For our country and for our children, the best is yet to come.
Broadcasting across the Pacific Northwest and covering Oregon, Washington, and Idaho on the Radio Northwest Network.
Lars.
And now.
He is an existential threat to democracy.
Here's your host.
Quiet, please.
Lars Larson.
Hey, welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. Imagine telling a convicted killer, yeah, you can do a couple of years in prison. That's enough to make up for a shooting in which one woman died and seven people were wounded, including a nine-year-old who was merely walking with his family on the way to a museum in Seattle, Washington. Imagine that. And the guy finally gets convicted, and he finally gets sent to prison about 3 years later, and he only does a couple of years in prison, and now he's out walking around. Now, is he going to be on the show? I wish I could tell you that. I would love to talk to William Tolliver, one of the two people who were involved in as shooters in a 2020 shootout in Seattle, Washington, that killed a woman and wounded a nine-year-old, but he's already out of prison. I want to get into talking about that in just a moment. First, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I'm always glad to take your phone calls and your emails. If you want to jump into the best conversation in talk journalism, it's here every day at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@larslarson.com. And if you're a naysayer, naysayers always go to the head of the line, 866-439-5277. Our poll on X today. We put up a brand new opinion poll every single day. Today's question, should welfare recipients be allowed to spend taxpayer-funded benefits on whatever they want? Now, I know that some people get confused by this. They see an EBT card and they assume that that's just food stamps or SNAP. It's not. It is both SNAP or food stamps, whichever label you prefer. It is also what is known as TANF. TANF is the fancy new woke term, temporary aid to needy families, T-A-N-F, that took the place of welfare or the dole or a bunch of other names that we had for welfare that somebody had decided, oh, that's too pejorative. We've got to call it by a new name. I mean, every few years, they will invent a brand new name for welfare or the dole, but that's really what it is. Consider this. Florida is becoming the first state that will actually put a limit on how your welfare cash, not your food stamps, your welfare cash can be spent. And they're putting these limits on. And I'm sure the Democrats are having a cow about this. They're saying you can't spend your TANF money on tattoos or theme park tickets or video games or vaping products or other items not generally considered basic needs. Now, who's bringing about that change? That, of course, would be the Trump administration. I mean, you're not going to catch the Democrats out trying to put limits on welfare. I mean, the Democrats consider the entire welfare class to be their owned and operated voters. So they're not going to put limits on that. But imagine that Florida is the first state. And I would ask you this, should welfare recipients in any state in America be allowed to spend their taxpayer-funded benefits on whatever they want, including tats, theme park tickets, video games, and vaping products? I would say allowed to spend it that way. You can vote any way you like. You'll find the question at Lars Larson Show on X. You'll also find it on my website at LarsLarson.com. Let me get back to William Tolliver. This is a certified bad guy, and yet for a crime that happened, you know, 6 years ago, he only went to prison for about 3 years, even though his crime ended with the death of a woman, an innocent woman, and the wounding of a nine-year-old child. And he's already out of prison. He was released on home monitor in 2023 while he was waiting trial. And he was picked up later on because he was told if you're out awaiting trial, you can't have a gun. You can't go out and do these things. What happened? He went out and threatened somebody with a gun. 65 previous arrests, 4 felony convictions for William Tolliver, and they finally find him guilty. He pleads guilty to amended charges, second-degree manslaughter. He got a real gift. He didn't end up with first. third-degree assault, second-degree unlawful possession of a firearm, and what does he get? In total, 4 years in prison. He's sentenced in June of 23. He is already out of prison. We are told that he has served his sentence. He has satisfied his debt to society. And what did they say in court before he pleaded guilty? The shooting was described as the result of a gang feud, Tolliver opening fire in a crowded area to target a rival gang member. In other words, he was settling a score. Do I suspect that the shooting that happened just this year in Seattle at the Bight of Seattle was also one of those gang settle a score kind of incidents? I do. And here's the problem. The biggest problem we've got is that we're communicating a message. When you do this kind of thing, when somebody goes out and kills somebody, the woman who died, wounds seven people, including a nine-year-old child, and you tell them, we're not going to hold you responsible. We're going to give you a couple of years behind bars, and that's it. You're telling the public, we're not going to come down hard on violent criminals. You're telling the violent criminals, we're not going to hold you responsible. So, at the end of the day, you're going to get more of that kind of behavior. Anytime that you tell the bad guys, we are not really going to come down on you like a ton of bricks if you do this kind of thing. You can even go out and kill somebody. You can wound a bunch of people. You can set up a downtown part of any city in America as a shooting gallery where anybody who happens to be walking through, including this child. The nine-year-old kid was with his family on a trip to a science museum. And he ends up getting hit. Seven people injured in total, including that nine-year-old boy. All of them injured. Why? Because of a criminal by the name of William Tolliver. And I would love to talk to that man. I would love to find out. And I'd love to talk to the prosecutors and the judge and find out, do you really think that this is justice? Is this truth in sentencing? You say, this is the worst thing you can do. You've murdered a person. You've taken a woman's life. You've injured seven people. You've wounded them. That means they're probably going to go through the rest of their lives afraid of going to places in public because one time when they were in a place in public, they got shot. And you're going to tell them, we're not going to do much to that criminal. He's going to be out of prison within just a couple of years. You're telling all of society, we don't take any of this seriously. Tolliver was originally charged, as he should have been, with first-degree murder. He didn't have to plead to that. Six counts of first-degree assault, unlawful possession of a firearm, and while he was awaiting trial and was told, you're going to be on electronic monitoring at grandma's house, and you're not allowed to have guns, you're not allowed to have contact with witnesses. Well, he ends up back in custody a couple of months later because he was out threatening somebody with a gun. So clearly, the judges don't take the system seriously. The prosecutors don't take the system seriously. And clearly, the criminals don't take the system seriously. It's a pleasure to be with you. I'm glad to get to your phone calls and emails at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. And you can always, well, you can always go to the head of the line if you're a naysayer. We always put naysayers first in line, always have, and always will. The Northwest Nonsense is coming up next on the Radio Northwest Network and the Lars Larson Show. Lord in Oregon or
speak now or forever hold your peace. 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-HEY-LARS. Now, back to the Lars Larson Show.
That makes a lot of sense. A lot of nonsense.
Right. You're bloody well right. You know you got a right to sit.
This is the Northwest Nonsense.
How much longer do we have to sit for this nonsense?
pumped by River City Environmental. That great moment every day where Lars brings you the cold, hard facts without any liberal wokeness from the Daily Dead fish wrapper or mainstream media bias.
Hey, somebody tell me there is a mom or dad out there who actually wants their child welcomed back to school by a drag queen who goes by the stage name Poison Waters. Forgive me for sounding unwoke, but there's something more than a little bit creepy about a man who not only likes to dress up as a woman, but who's interested in befriending your children. Portland Public Schools released a video for the first days of classes featuring Poison Waters, that's the drag name, in full drag regalia. Identified in the video as an educator, a host, and an advocate. National news media, like the New York Post, America's oldest newspaper, picked up the story this morning. Don't bet on the Daily Dead fish wrapper covering this story at all. I mean, after all, that would mean Oregon Live would have to actually say, and we approve of this or we don't approve of this. Here's a school district that's facing massive budget shortfalls and a majority of students who can't read, write, or do arithmetic. And its opening message is, we want to indoctrinate your kids and groom them into some kind of gender identity. Even as Oregon's population has grown, Portland Public Schools student census shrank from 50,000 plus to the 40s. The latest forecast shows it's going to shrink by another 10,000 or more over the next decade. Telling parents that educators include drag queens only seems likely to accelerate that trend. If you're a parent, get your kids out of the public schools. If you want to join the best conversation in talk journalism, and by the way, I would take a naysayer. If somebody wants to say why it's perfectly appropriate to have drag queens associating with young children in public schools, I'd love to hear who's in favor of this garbage. 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. Vote on our X poll. Our X poll can be found at Lars Larson Show. And today's question of the day, brought to you by Multnomah Medical Clinic. No pills, no shots, no surgery. Fix what's actually causing the problem at Multnomah Medical Clinic. Jason writes in, Lars, this high fuel cost is murdering the timber industry right now, along with no demand and relatively high interest rates for anybody younger than 40 and with no end in sight. I'm still trying to feel the benefits of being oil independent. I sincerely hope that all this Iran business was the right move and we don't lose everything we've fought for the last 10 years. We've got 60 days to turn it around, or we're going to feel like we've been run over by a garbage truck the Wednesday after the election. Your thoughts? Signed, Jason Raw. Jason, I agree with you. Do I think it was the right call? I think it was the only call for Donald Trump. I think he looked at Iran and said every other president, including Obama, has said we cannot let Iran become nuclear armed. Except that Trump is the one president who's actually willing to take concrete action to stop it from happening. The rest of them, Joe Biden, Barack Obama, etc., they all just gave the idea lip service. They weren't actually willing to do the deed. So that's number one. Number two, are we energy independent or oil independent? Yes. Doesn't mean that it's going to be cheap, but it does mean that we're never going to be in that position where other countries could say, we're not going to give you any of our oil, and you end up with no oil supply. It just matters how much you end up having to pay for it. And do I think the Iran war is going to be over soon? Let's hope so. If not, it could be bad times in the midterm election in November. And now today's Daily Grill.
Insane.
Are you completely insane?
Ridiculous.
They get more and more ridiculous.
Flat out dumb.
You're even dumber than I thought.
Who deserves today's Lars Grill of the Day?
Maybe they're just really, really stupid.
Presented by Oregon City Garage Door.
You know, about a year ago, we told you about the Bybee Lake Hope Center. Now, what is the Bybee Lake Hope Center? At one point, it was scheduled to become a jail. It never did. It was known as Wapato Jail, but it never actually operated as a jail. It cost the taxpayers of Multnomah County about $60 million. And then Multnomah County had to sell it to Jordan Schnitzer for about a tenth of that amount of money, about $6 million. And what did Schnitzer do? He donated its use to the Bybee Lakes Hope Center that's actually provided beds to get people off the street and actually try to straighten their lives out. In fact, I think the Bybee Lake Hope Center, by all accounts, has done a very good job. So about a year ago, we were talking about the fact that of all the various programs that Multnomah County was willing to fund, they wouldn't give money to the Bybee Lakes Hope Center, even though it actually had a track record, and most of the outfits that Multnomah County was funding did not have a track record of success. Well, guess what? They're up against it again. Portland Homeless Shelter Bybee Lakes is raising funds to keep 100 beds from being cut by Multnomah County. The problem is Multnomah County and Portland have both cut the money going to Bybee Lakes, and that is, it's ridiculous, because Bybee Lakes Hope Center has actually done some good things. Do I have any tie to the center other than thinking that they do a good job? No, I don't. But do I think that if you've got a system that actually has a track record of success, you should continue to fund that system? My favorite post on social media, the leader of a South Florida company that markets its services to foreign women seeking to give birth in the United States, they showed up in front of lawmakers today in Congress. Vladimir Lorenz, who is founder and chief medical officer at Miami Medical Concierge Services, invoked his right against self-incrimination under the Fifth Amendment. I declined to answer on the grounds that a truthful answer might incriminate me. No doubt. Representative Brandon Grill, actually grilled a witness connected to the company known as Have My Baby in Miami. That's the way they marketed it, about an alleged birthright tourism, and he got Fifth Amendment over and over and over again. Gill asked whether the business helped children of the Chinese Communist Party obtain U.S. citizenship, whether it had ever facilitated births for members of Tren de Aragua, MS-13, or other narco-terrorist organizations. Each time, the doctor in charge said, I will not answer because giving an honest answer might incriminate me in a crime. Wow. Birthright tourism. It is great to see this getting shut down. Back in a moment. Glad to be with you on a Tuesday. In a moment, a 2,500 seat megachurch is about to get flattened for a $2 billion rail yard. Is that progress or is it government overreach? And if you believe in supporting American craftsmanship, veterans, and independent talk radio, go to LarsLarson.com and get a limited edition Lars Larson Show challenge coin, proudly made by American veterans. All proceeds go to benefit veterans. You're listening to The Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network.
The Lars Larson Show. Portland's news. Have something to say but don't want to talk? Email Lars at talk@LarsLarson.com. Now, back to the Lars Larson Show.
Hey, welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's Tuesday. It's the Radio Northwest Network, and I think it's outrageous that crazy light rail systems in both Oregon and Washington seem to be eating everybody's lunch. They chew up gigantic amounts of resources. They don't actually move that many people around. And now Sound Transit is threatening to bulldoze a church. I thought we'd talk to Pastor Casey Treat about that, founder and senior pastor at Christian Faith Center in Federal Way, Washington. Pastor Treat, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Lars. Great to be with you.
So tell my Northwest audience, because we're all over Oregon, Washington, and Idaho, tell them what Sound Transit is threatening to do to your church.
Yeah, it's a sad day for us here at Christian Faith Center, south of Seattle. A government attorney stood in an American courtroom and told the jury that a 10,000-member church is functionally obsolete. We have too much church, and the court agreed. And it seems they're going to bulldoze the church to put in a train maintenance facility. And it's a difficult battle for us to fight.
Now, hold on. Is, Pastor, just so I understand correctly and so my audience understands, is the fight over at this point, or is there still some room to maybe get justice out of this whole situation?
The fight for our church is over. What we're fighting now, can we replace it? We had 50 acres. We'll never find 50 acres. But we're trying to rebuild. In King County, unincorporated, you cannot build a church. They will not allow it. So, you know, we go to the smaller communities, Federal Way, Kent, Covington. We're trying to find properties. And we don't have money right now. They have actually, what they've done is closed our church. And the court said, you can just take the money. You do not need to build a new church. And so that's the battle that we're facing.
Yeah, except that I explain this to, I mean, I'm a person of faith. I don't go, don't attend your church, but I'm a Protestant Christian. Explain that just taking the money might be something if this were a grocery store that you owned or some other kind of property, but you've got a duty to your congregation and they're telling you, no, just pastor, just take the money and run.
Exactly. And we've been here 50 years. I never thought I would be in this place. And you think that government wants to help the community, cares about the community, but in our experience, they do not care. They just have no concern for not only the 10,000 people that attend our services, but hundreds of people that we feed, the homeless, caring for foster care children, helping single moms. Yeah, just walk away. You don't need to continue those things. A car wash for our trains are, you know, it's more important. Essentially, that's what they're saying.
I do want to go back to the thing you started with, and that was saying, standing in front of the jury saying, this is old-fashioned. I don't want to put words in your mouth, but how is it they've decided that a physical church where people can gather under one roof and hear about the Bible is outmoded? What do they mean by that?
Yeah, functionally obsolete. The court actually agreed with the attorney and the appraiser who said, you know, you can do church online. You people are leaving church. You don't need a large facility, and you are obsolete. And here's another thing, Lars, that was astounding in the courtroom. If we spoke about our attendance or community service or ministry to people or showed pictures of people in the sanctuary, the judge threatened us with a mistrial and we would have to pay Sound Transit's legal fees. I mean, the deck was stacked against us.
How is it a mistrial for you merely to tell the jury, this is what our church did? It wasn't just a building. It wasn't just the faith, but it's all the activities that were carried out in the building. How would that cause a mistrial?
Exactly. And that was our argument. But they're saying, we're not buying a church. We're just buying a building. But by taking our building, they've essentially taken all of our ministry, right? I mean, how are you going to cook meals for homeless people if you don't have a kitchen? How are you going to take care of kids if you don't have space for the daycare? Our school will have to close. You know, it's a sad day for us. And again, you think government cares about community, but I think they're really not caring at all.
By the way, I've told people, the right of eminent domain and condemnation is essential to government, but should only be used when it's absolutely, you know, it's the last option. What were there better options for Sound Transit to locate their maintenance facility that didn't have to bulldoze your church?
They had six different sites, and we were one of them. And this process has been going for over 8 years. But I think they believed and actually said in court, this was the easiest and cheapest opportunity for Sound Transit to possess 50 acres. The other sites would have been multiple ownerships, you know, different circumstances and more difficult. So they felt like we were the easiest to take. And, you know, we're going to continue to fight. We're going to believe to replace our church, rebuild somehow. We don't know how at this point, but, yeah, it's a difficult battle.
Pastor, do you have a place where my audience can go and see online any of the church's statement, the Christian Faith Center's statements and information about your mission?
Yeah, go to christianfaith.us. and you'll see what we're doing there. We're continuing to search for property options. You know, we're looking at old Walmart stores and whatever we can find. At this point, we wouldn't have enough money to rebuild, but we're going to continue to fight, continue to pray, continue to do what we do. We believe we'll find some kind of a breakthrough.
Well, I certainly hope you do. Pastor Treat, I appreciate you coming on and telling the story. We appreciate it, and my audience appreciates it, too.
Yeah, thank you, Lars. Thank you for what you do. We love your work.
Thank you, sir. That is Pastor Casey Treat. He is the pastor, founder, and senior pastor of the Christian Faith Center in Federal Way, Washington, about to meet the blade of the bulldozer from the folks at Sound Transit. And I would ask you this. I know that you've heard me say it plenty of times. I think light rail is a gigantic waste of time and money. But when it starts to bulldoze over elements of the community like this, I think it's just downright evil. You're listening to The Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network. The state nearly half
on the go. Can't listen to Lars live? No problem. Get the podcast 24/7 at LarsLarson.com. Now, more with Lars Larson.
Hey, welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you. It's a Tuesday. It's the Radio Northwest Network, and I'm glad to be with you. If you want to join the best conversation in talk journalism, it's here every day at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. Our poll on X today. Should welfare recipients be allowed to spend taxpayer-funded benefits on whatever they want? Things like tattoos or theme park tickets or video games or vaping products, things like that. Florida becoming the first state in America to actually put a limit on what you can do with your EBT cash. Not the food stamp money, but the EBT cash, meaning TANF and other kinds of cash benefits. To your calls now, if you want to join the best conversation in talk journalism, it's 866-HEY-LARS. And naysayers always go first. So, Alex, you're a naysayer, or you tell my producers you are. What do you and I disagree about that makes you one?
Well, I just wanted to make a comment about Poison Waters. I actually know this guy personally. He has volunteered for the organization that I work for. He's a really upstanding guy. He was Darcell's, like, right-hand man before Darcell passed away. And they, as you know, I mean, Darcell was an icon in this city and ran a very respectable and upstanding business. And I think
an adult business.
It's an adult business, but it's why is it
okay,
any different
no,
than
but
a
isn't
burlesque
that
show?
The key part? Why should Poison Waters, who's engaging in an adult sexual, I guess, fetish, he wants to dress up as a woman. Fine, he can do that. Why should that have anything to do with the public schools and young children? Is my question.
Oh, now you make a point, and I'm trying to tell you that you put a twist on it that he's a. I get the impression that you're saying that he's some kind of pervert. He's a upstanding gentleman in the community that does volunteer work for needy people. Now, when you talk about the schools, it's interesting. My son, who graduated from Ida B. Wells, his graduating class, the party, Poison Waters hosted that. And I don't
okay,
disagree
but,
with you 100%,
but
it should
actually,
be public funded.
You're dancing right into my lane, which is...
I know, I understand.
My question is, there are lots of things that adults do that are perfectly normal for adults to do that we don't do around children, nor do we tell children about them. We wait until there's an appropriate time for kids to understand that when they get a bit older. And my question would be, if you have this particular sexual fetish, and there's a sexual end to that, to say, I'm a man, but I want to dress up as a woman. This is what Kevin Cook apparently wants to do. Okay, fine. And I want to be around small children. Why? What is the connection there?
Well, I think since I know Kevin, it's not like we hang out a lot, but I know him pretty well because I have worked with him, and I'll speak just to that. He's an upstanding guy, and he wants to...
But you've said that already,
support.
But why not say, I want to go out and I want to display my drag queen attire at a club like Darcelle, which is adults only. And you say, okay, that's an appropriate place for it. If you say, but I want to go to the library and read stories to small children, you say, hold on, what is the connection between wanting to dress up as a woman and wanting to show up at either a school or a library and have some kind of close connection in your drag regalia in front of small children? What's the attraction?
Okay. Well, how is that any different? I'm going to ask a question of you.
Okay.
How is that any different than being a clown? Because clowns are pretty varying. They can be all kinds of crazy things. Men dress up as women clowns. Women dress up as man clowns. And frankly, clowns can have a pretty bad reputation too. Wouldn't you agree with that?
I know some kids who are scared to death of clowns. In that case, we do associate things like circuses and those kinds of entertainment with children. But is there a sexual end to being a clown? No, I'm just asking you because, for example, let me get very personal. Have you ever been inclined to dress up in women's clothes?
No.
And neither have I.
But,
neither have I. Now,
Kevin's an entertainer.
Well, no, hold on. They said he's an educator. So what is he educating kids to that the Portland Public Schools would say, we want to present this educator of ours who's a man who dresses up as a woman and wants to educate kids? What is he educating the kids to?
I don't know what his specific education credentials are. I know him as an entertainer. I went and saw him at his show. It was very funny. It was no more than burlesque in my mind, right?
Understood.
Wasn't anything overtly sexual, but it is, what's the word? It's body or it wasn't, anyway. I'm just trying to defend him a little bit.
I know you are, and I understand you like the guy. That's fine. You know, have I known people who've dressed up that way? Yeah, I have. Have I ever been inclined to do that? No. And in fact, go ahead.
He doesn't walk around like that all day and kind of like promoting this. And I don't think there's anything wrong with a little bit of exposure. I mean, I have children. I get it. I'm mostly on your side, but I don't think there's anything wrong with a little bit of exposure
exposure to what? To sexual peculiarities of adults?
I just don't think it has to be a sexual peculiarity.
You don't think that men dressing up as women is a sexual peculiarity? Then what is it?
As an entertainer and as a profession, I don't think it's anything different than an actor putting on a costume.
So in other words, just like playing Shakespeare?
Well, to a degree. I mean, now, can it have some connotations to it? Can it have some bad things? Sure, but just like we talked about, so do clowns.
Well, an interesting point. You're a good naysayer, Alex. Thank you very much. It's a Tuesday. It's a pleasure to be with you. I'm glad to get to your phone calls and emails at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. Jaquette writes in, Lars, that church in Tacoma could probably stop sound transit in their tracks if the church converted to Islam and declared the building a mosque. I would imagine they could have. And Marie said much the same thing. Casey Treat, the pastor, is missing a good defense. Change the name of his church to the Islamic Faith Center, and Sound Transit wouldn't dare touch him. And then, of course, there's John, who says they won't let them build a church in King County, but no problem building a mosque. And, you know, that is the double standards of Democrats. If they didn't have double standards, they'd have no standards at all. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network.
The Lars Larson Show.
FM News 101.
Lars. This is the Lars Larson Show.
President Trump is one badass president. He secured the border at a level we've never seen before.
Honestly provocative talk with Lars Larson.
For our country and for our children, the best is yet to come.
Broadcasting across the Pacific Northwest and covering Oregon, Washington, and Idaho on the Radio Northwest Network.
Lies.
And now.
He is an existential threat to democracy.
Here's your host.
Quiet, please.
Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. Well, theoretically, Seattle kids are supposed to be back in school classrooms tomorrow. Are there teachers going to show up? Or are those teachers going to go on strike and while they're on strike, collect unemployment payments as well? I thought we'd talk about that. And I'll get to your phone calls and emails in a moment at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. And join me in welcoming Elizabeth New, who's director and policy analyst at the Washington Policy Center. Elizabeth, welcome back to the program. And are we going to see striking teachers cheat the kids out of a day of education tomorrow and collect unemployment checks at the same time?
I don't, and I'll tell you why in a minute, but they are negotiating down to the wire on this strike, and the school union said there was promising progress overnight, which is encouraging, but there's still no agreement, so about 50,000 students and their families are waiting to learn whether school will actually open tomorrow and if parents can go to work. It's ridiculous. Public employees should not be holding families hostage or threatening to deny a taxpayer-funded service. And there are other ways to negotiate pay and working conditions, clearly. As for the UI pay, Washington's new law does allow striking workers to receive up to 6 weeks of unemployment benefits, but I don't think teachers will be doing so. Benefits cannot begin until the second Sunday after a strike begins, and then a claimant must satisfy the ordinary one-week unpaid waiting period. So Seattle educators, if they only strike for a few days, as happened in 2022, there could be no strike payout at all.
Okay, and in the case of the teachers, I don't understand why they're going on strike at all, because, correct me if I'm wrong, their contract ran out yesterday, but under the terms of the contract, they can continue to bargain, they can continue to get paid their regular paychecks while bargaining goes on, and if and when they negotiate a raise, the raise will be retroactive and will cover this period in time. They could do that and not cause all this damage to families and leave families hanging, you know, on the day before, you know, the 2nd of September, wondering, are our kids going to be in school tomorrow or not? They don't have to do this, and yet they're doing it anyway. So what does that tell us?
Well, it's not about the kids, and you're exactly right. They could keep working under their current contract and receive any retroactive pay that was negotiated. But, you know, this gives them, they think, a better platform to work from. They're using schools and families and special ed kids, for God's sake, as bargaining chips in this process.
And by the way, they're saying that they're trying to advocate for special ed kids. Isn't the head of their labor union actually under, there are questions about her treatment of special ed kids?
True. She was under district investigation for physically harming one of her students when elected to the position. She denies the allegations, however, and I say due process is warranted, but it's weird, super weird.
It's very weird. And what they're demanding, I mean, they voted 91% to authorize a strike. They're currently making, for a part-time job, they're making almost $120,000 a year plus benefits on top of that. And they say the district has offered them a cumulative almost 9% raise over the next 3 years, and the teachers have apparently said not good enough.
Yeah, the Seattle Public Schools superintendent actually released really revealing numbers, I think 2 days ago, and it showed how much not only contract pay, but then the additional pay days that they get added up for most teachers who are trying to get this pay negotiated, $142,000 a year. You know, and it's just, here's the thing that frustrates me most is You know, there are other ways to bargain, whether you agree that compensation should be higher or you don't. There's other ways to do this. You know, the WFSE, the state employees group, they just held a walkout yesterday on workers' own time, as I understand it, at lunch breaks or other breaks. There's no reason teachers have to be denying school to kids and their families.
No, and in fact, it is a part-time job. And I guess the part that I always get back to is this, Elizabeth. If they were actually producing a good result, then I'd say, well, then maybe they're deserving of a raise. That's the way most of the rest of the world works, is if you're doing a really good job and you can go to the boss and say, hey, boss, look at the kind of job I've done the last year. Don't I deserve a raise? In this case, the teachers could only come to the public and say, hey, by the way, you see the kind of job we're doing? More than half the kids don't know how to read, write, or do math. So you should give us a raise. And if you do, we'll promise to do a better job. But right now, the job we're doing sucks, isn't it? Doesn't it?
Yeah, you know, outcomes are poor, and we shouldn't keep pouring money into a failed outcome. However, I do, in educators' defense, you know, there's a lot of kids coming to school that are not ready to be there, who are not cared for properly by families. But at the same time, schools are not expecting anything from families either, and they keep taking over more and more things that families should be handling. We're offering far more than a basic education, despite what unions will say.
Well, aren't the Seattle school kids coming to class, and you can say they're, you know, the parents have never been better educated than parents. If you went back 50 years, would you say the average family was better educated than they are today? Because I don't know that that's true. I don't think it is. I don't think facts back that up. And I know the teachers always want to say, it's not really our fault that we can't actually educate your kids. It's your fault. It's the parents' fault. Except that the schools, as you said, they keep pushing the parents farther and farther out of the process and telling them, you have no right to say anything about how we educate the kids. Just shut up and pay your taxes.
Right. I think there's plenty of blame to go around. And I do think people are more educated today than 50 years ago, like you. But I'm not sure the behavior is better than it was 50 years ago. You know, I've substituted in classrooms a little bit at my kids' school. And I can tell you there are a lot of behavior problems that distract from the school day, from the teaching, from students trying to learn.
You know what, Elizabeth, every time I hear that from a teacher, I say you have the most powerful union in America. Can you go in and demand that you have better discipline in classrooms and say, because
right?
You demand everything else. You demand paychecks, you demand curriculum, you demand hours and everything else. Demand better discipline in the classroom and say if our members cannot get a well-disciplined classroom backed up by management, then we can't do our jobs. Except you never hear the teachers ask for that. They want to warehouse the kids and then be paid as though they're educating them and say, no, it's really not our fault the kids aren't learning because we don't have good discipline in the classroom. We can't control the classroom. Well, then demand that at the next bargaining session instead of just saying, pay us more money and we'll fail for another 3 years. Elizabeth, thanks so much. That's Elizabeth New from the Washington Policy Center. Back in a moment, I'm going to tell you about a sob story that the Seattle Times is saying about a poor illegal alien. If you're losing.
Local, national, has you covered. Call him from anywhere. 866 Hey Lars. Now, back to the Lars Larson Show.
Hey, welcome back to the program. I am sick to death of the sob stories that the legacy media in America is telling about illegal aliens in America. And let me defend that because you're going to see some headlines, and I've been seeing them almost every day. And they're not about one case. They are seeing these, you're seeing these kind of stories in just about every corner of the United States of America. But this latest one, it is from the Seattle Times Daily Fish Wrapper, the Seattle Times newspaper. And here's the headline, exactly as they stated it, equity and inclusion. Green card holder, 76, with cancer held in Tacoma ICE facility. Now, by ICE, they mean Immigrations and Customs Enforcement. Now, if you read that headline, you'd say, wow, that sounds sad. Green card holders are people who've come into America legally. That automatically gives you a positive view of this person. So green card holder and 76 years of age. Oh, and the poor old man has cancer. So why in the world would he be locked up in a Tacoma ICE facility? Let me dig into the details of that one, and you're not going to believe it, because he's been illegally in this country for more than 30 years, and he tried to cheat the system. That's the short answer of why. But let me get to that in a moment. First, if you want to join the best conversation in talk journalism, it's here every day at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. If you're a naysayer, with naysayers, we always put naysayers to the head of the list at 866-439-5277. Send emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. And our poll on X: should welfare recipients be allowed to spend taxpayer-funded benefits on whatever they want to spend it on? Now, you might wonder, well, hold on. If you're on welfare, that means you're short of cash. You don't have a lot of money. And if the government is giving you some money to tide you over, things like TANF, which is Temporary Aid to Needy Families, it's the new woke name for welfare or the dole, but now they call it TANF. And it's different than SNAP, which is the food stamps, the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. EBT cards, which most of us have seen an EBT card used at a grocery store and places like that. What you may or may not understand is that part of what's on that EBT card is what we used to call food stamps, which now called SNAP. What is also on that EBT card is TANF, welfare. It's cash benefits that are supposed to be given to people because they're in dire need of being able to pay their bills. Well, guess what? An awful lot of people on EB or with EBT cards spend that money on all kinds of other things like tattoos, theme park tickets, video games, vaping products, and other items not generally considered basic needs. So the Trump administration is asking states, will you please go in and set some limits on how that welfare cash can be spent? They're going to block recipients from using their cash benefits loaded onto EBT cards for tattoos, theme park tickets, video games, vaping products, and other items generally not considered basic needs. Florida, believe it or not, is the first state to actually put a limit like that on. The other 49 states have not done it at all. So, should welfare recipients be allowed to spend taxpayer-funded benefits on anything they want? My answer to that would be no. They shouldn't be allowed to spend that at all. But in any case, you can find the X poll at Lars Larson Show and at LarsLarson.com. Now, let me tell you about this 76-year-old who I call an illegal alien. But if you say, but Lars, he was here on a green card. Yes, it turns out he lied on the green card. And why is he being held in ICE custody now? Because he lied on the green card. What had happened? In a statement to the Seattle Times, the ICE spokesperson said that Javar, this is the guy who's being held in custody, Javar was arrested because he failed to disclose that he had a criminal conviction in the Philippines when he originally applied for a visa to move to the United States in 1995, 31 years ago. He wanted to come here because his father was already living in this country, and he was living here as a U.S. citizen. The ICE spokesperson says Javar's disclosure would have made him ineligible to enter the United States at the time of his original application. So he comes to the United States in the mid-90s. He's lied about his background. He didn't tell about the fact that he was involved in a crime that he went to prison for. He went to prison and served at least 3 years in jail before he was released on parole. Now, what was he involved in? The only details that are available of that apparently involved the death of at least one person. And as a result, there was an altercation in the Philippines in the 1970s. It left one person dead, and Javar went to jail or to prison for 3 years. He then applies to come to the United States and decides to not tell the truth about his criminal background. Now, when do they find out about his criminal background? About 2 years ago, he goes in and applies to become an American citizen because he's lived in the U.S. on a green card for about 30 years. If you do that and you take the test and you pass the test and then take the oath, it is possible to become an American citizen. However, it isn't possible if you lied on the original application to get the green card to begin with. So, this guy who now has stage 4 cancer, and he's getting treatment, courtesy of the American taxpayer, he's getting treatment for his cancer here in the United States. So, he clearly wants to stay in the United States. The problem is, when he applied to become a green card holder in America, you have to tell the truth about your circumstances. Now, is that true of just about every other circumstance for American citizens as well? If you apply to buy a house and you apply for a mortgage and lie on the application, it's a federal crime. If you lie on an application for a job, if you apply to be in the military and you lie about your background, it is considered a federal felony crime because you have signed a document that is not accurate in which you are lying. Now, he wanted to tell a lie because he didn't want to tell the authorities what he'd been involved in that involved the person, one, at least one person dying and him going to jail for 3 years. Is that the kind of person that you want to have in the United States? And yet, when the Seattle Times, the legacy media, tells the story, they say, oh, green card holder 76 with stage 4 cancer held in ICE facility. Oh, you feel so sorry for the man. They say, well, why in the world would they take a poor man who's come here and done it legally? Because he didn't do it legally. He lied about who he was, he lied about his background, and he got in under false pretenses, and now he's going to get the boot right back to the Philippines. Glad to get your calls. You're listening to The Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network.
The Lars Larson Show. Portland's news, traffic, and follow the Lars Larson Show on X at Lars Larson Show. You never know what he'll post. Now, back to the Lars Larson Show.
Hey, welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you. I got Sean Higgins with me right now, research fellow at the Competitive Enterprise Institute. Sean, welcome back. And forgive me for going to this example, but it's just the first one that occurred to me. When we talk about AI, I know the conventional wisdom is artificial intelligence is going to wipe out a lot of American jobs. But back in the day, a famous president who claimed to be a constitutional scholar named Barack Hussein Obama once said, well, we remember all the jobs that were wiped out when automated teller machines, ATMs, came around. And of course, those of us who knew the background of it said, no, it actually made more jobs in banks, just different kinds of jobs. So the ATMs didn't actually wipe the jobs out at all. And I'm reminded of that when people make the prediction now, which seems like one that on first blush, you look at it and say, yeah, AI will probably wipe out a lot of jobs. So everybody is bracing for that result from AI. Is that what's going to happen, or does just the opposite seem more likely to happen?
It's more likely to happen in a way similar to the situation you described with ATM machines. I mean, if you're old enough like me to remember the days when you had to go to the bank to actually get cash before ATMs existed,
me too.
That you had to stand in line with the people who had serious like financial issues that they needed the bank to sort out. Even when all you wanted to do was have a quick $100, and so you had to wait behind them, it took forever. And ATMs sort of circumvented that problem. The people who had real issues that they needed a bank teller or somebody else at the bank to deal with can now, you know, focus on those, and the rest of us could just go to the machine and get the money we wanted and get back out there. So it didn't take the jobs away, and as the example you said, it created other jobs because people had to install those ATM machines. They had to come by and put the cash in them so they could be withdrawn and that type of stuff. Now, since then, of course, ATM machines have gone the way of the dodo as well, but that's due to other technological changes to Cash App and stuff like that. So that's sort of how these things shake out. But it wasn't the ATM machine that took away the bank teller jobs. And so the example that you use is actually a good one. I wish I'd thought of it myself because it does sort of explain the scenario with how AI works as well.
I just remember how dumb it seemed when Obama said that. A lot of us said, no, I don't think that's what happened. And we went and checked, and sure enough, there were a couple of economists somewhere, labor experts who actually did a study and said, no, the number of jobs in banks went up after the ATMs took over some of the more routine jobs. And I guess I compare it to other kinds of technology. You want to go back far enough, go back to the warehouse that used to have men, mostly men, some women, you know, moving things around by hand, and then along came hand trucks. And then along came forklifts, and along came, you know, now automated warehouses. And yet all of them did not put, they did not unemploy the vast majority of Americans simply because jobs that used to be done by human hands were then done by some mechanism instead. How do we go about proving that, though, with AI and allay people's fears that this is what's going to happen?
It's going to be tricky. I mean, I have an op-ed out on the Center Square about this issue. It looks at some recent research that was done by a technology company called RAMP, in which they basically they looked at both the AI adoption in terms of how much they bought from vendors that provide AI and their hiring compared. And the ones that the companies invested in AI, actually the more they hired. It was the ones that didn't invest that much, that's basically had negligible job growth. But the ones that did invest in a lot, you know, hired more people. And that's because they need people to manage it. They need people to work with it, to feed it information and to double check it. I mean, one of the things about AI is, while it can create a lot of things, you also have to monitor it very closely because it's capable of doing what's called hallucination. AI can literally make stuff up because it doesn't really understand the difference between fact and fiction. So when you use AI, it can do a lot of work for you very well, but you do still need editors and people to watch over it. And that's the type of job that I think, one of the types of jobs I think AI is going to be creating. The thing about AI is it can increase your production and your output. So it's kind of a dumb thing to hire AI and fire people, because that just means you're going to stay at the same level that you were before. If, on the other hand, you bring in AI but keep the workers, then all those workers can produce a lot more. And that's what the...
Sean Higgins is with me from the Competitive Enterprise Institute. Sean, I want to see if we drop that connection. Sean, are you still there? Joel, can you see if you can find Sean and get in touch with him? Because that's one of the concerns I've got. One of the pleasures of AI lately has been watching all the lawyers who get bit in the backside by AI, because they'll have AI do their research. They'll say, find me some cases that meet this. And then they'll walk into court and a judge will have to point out, you just brought me a bunch of cases in this lawsuit you brought that don't exist. They're the product of AI hallucinations. I don't even know how we're supposed to guard against that. Do you, Sean?
Yeah, and this is one of the reasons why we're just going to need a lot of people to monitor it. And one of the things where the areas we're going to hire. There's another case, for example, the patent office used AI to basically examine patent applications. And then when they looked through the patent application analysis that the AI created, they discovered that it created precedents that didn't exist. So they actually had to have as many people before sort of looking through it. So you can do it. You can use AI in a dumb way, too. And one of the things that we're going to see over the next few years is people basically figuring out the best practices for it. Every new technology goes through this period where you don't quite know what it does, and you're trying to figure out how it applies. I mean, remember when the Internet first came along, a lot of the predictions that people had back in the day of how it would work haven't really come to pass. It's become something that's ubiquitous and we use a lot and has generally improved our productivity, but it didn't do it necessarily in the ways we thought at the time. And that's just simply the way technology always works.
And I guess, Sean, one of the concerns I've had is that this technology seems to have come along much faster. I mean, even when you talk about mechanization or industrial facilities that went from steam power to electric power to something else, that as those changes happened, they took a certain amount of time. You're telling me that AI may actually have the same kind of progress, that is not going to come in all at once and just wipe out jobs.
It's certainly going to take some time before we figure out optimally how to use it and how it works. And it's also going to be developing along that timeline. I mean, part of the reason why there's so much anxiety and so much concern about it is because it has come so quickly. And it hasn't helped that some of the tech CEOs have talked about it in a frankly dumb way, basically warning that millions of jobs are going to be lost before we even really know what's going to happen. And that's obviously going to create some you know, anxiety among people. But the smarter people who are looking at this are saying, like, yeah, there'll be some disruption, but, you know, all technology does that, and we need to sort of work through it. I mean, you know, all sorts of things that we adopt and accept. We don't sometimes, it takes a while before we figure out how to use it. Remember, like when home video came along, it was decades before people realized you could also put television on home video and watch that, because nobody thought anybody wanted to do that because it was already on television.
Yeah, and why would you want to do that? Sean Higgins is a research fellow at the Competitive Enterprise Institute. Sean, it's always a pleasure. Back in just a moment. I'll be glad to get to your phone calls and emails. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network. State nearly half.
Take a peek inside Lars's studio. Follow him on Instagram at the Lars Larson Show. Now, more with Lars Larson.
Hey, welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you. I'm glad to get to your phone calls and emails. It turns out that arrests are about eightfold over the Biden years, and lawmakers in Salem are just trying to make it harder for FBI agents and ICE agents to do their jobs. Are Oregon Democrats shielding illegal aliens instead of actually following the law? I'll get to that story in a moment. First, though, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. If you want to join the best conversation in talk journalism, it happens right here every day at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. And if you're a naysayer, we always put naysayers to the head of the line. Again, 866-439-5277. Our poll on X today: should welfare recipients be allowed to spend taxpayer-funded benefits on whatever it is they want, including tattoos, theme park tickets, video games, vaping products, and other things that are not considered basic needs? The Trump administration is urging states to emulate Florida. Florida is now the first state in America to impose new limits on how welfare cash can be spent. They are blocking recipients from using the cash side of that EBT benefit for tattoos and theme park tickets and the like. So, should welfare recipients be allowed to spend on whatever they want? My answer to that would be no. You can answer the X poll question any way you like. You'll find it at Lars Larson Show and at LarsLarson.com. Yesterday, I asked you this because, you know, when you drive up to one of those coffee places and you order a coffee, and the person who takes your order then takes the payment, usually from a card, and then they offer you the opportunity to give them a tip before you've received any service at all. And I asked our delivery and service folks getting too pushy about tips. 93% of you agreed with me and said yes. Only 7% of you said no to that question. In any case, glad to be with you. Glad to take your calls. My favorite email of the day so far today, but you can send more to talk@LarsLarson.com, is brought to you by Multnomah Medical Clinic. No pills, no shots, no surgery. Fix what's actually causing the problem at Multnomah Medical Clinic. Scott Rose writes in, Lars, a caller you got yesterday was obviously very liberal, saying that the Republicans will lose the midterms when every active poll says that 53 or 54 seats are going for the Republicans, not a filibuster proof, but no impeachment again. He also toes the line of the left when it comes to fascism, which has nothing to do with actual fascism. I know you know this, supported by the left during World War II, but they put their big Bernaysian big lie to misdirect the left off their complicity with fascist states. The only thing I say he got right is saying socialism is not the answer. I've seen the product of 70-plus years of socialism firsthand. Moscow in 93. It doesn't work. And even the Russian I spoke with in the country agreed, except the old guard who are indoctrinated by the Soviet education system, who we so lost that they, as an example, could not quite make the connection when we were talking to them about a deal to get a replica of an old airplane, a Tupolev 25, Chokhlov's plane, for the Pearson Air Museum. They were typical apparatchiks. They were very sad. And why we never met with Chokhlov's son, Igor, But his daughter-in-law and his grandson were great people. Keep up the great work, signed Scott Rose. Scott, thanks very much. Send those emails to talk@LarsLarsen.com and consider the latest numbers that we're hearing about what's happening to arrests of illegal aliens in the Pacific Northwest. Immigration arrests in Oregon in 2025 are up, and so far in 26, combined, they are 8 times higher than the number of immigration arrests during the first 2 years of the Biden administration, when federal agents made almost 300 arrests. Oregon hit its peak immigration arrests in the fall of last year when the federal government launched an operation targeting immigrants, so-called, living in the Willamette Valley. Those actions resulted in more than 1,000 immigration arrests in the state between September and November. Oregon Democrats with majority control of the state legislature responded by passing several laws February of this year aimed at increasing protections for illegal aliens, including issuing guidance to schools and hospitals on how to respond when federal agents turn up on campus grounds and restricting federal agents from wearing masks. The latter has been tried in other states as well. Immigration arrests in Oregon in 2026 have not returned to the peak levels seen last fall, but they are still outpacing the number of arrests made during the first 8 months of 2025. So the people that immigration agents arrested over the last 2 years in Oregon came from about 75 different countries. More than half of them were Mexican citizens, followed by Guatemalan and Venezuelan citizens. So consider what's going on, and I'm going to tell you about the latest argument that you are seeing that is being made by the legacy media. And I saw some of the headlines today. They're saying, well, we don't understand because the ICE agents are arresting people who are not accused of other crimes. Well, isn't being in the United States illegally enough of a crime? Because I certainly think it is. I mean, if you are already in somebody else's country illegally, is being arrested just for that, even though you haven't committed a rape or an assault or a murder or any other kind of crime, isn't that plenty of reason to take that person into custody? I think that it is, and I'd love to hear the naysayer who says, oh, no, we should let illegal aliens stay in our country until and unless they commit some other kind of crime. I do want to give you one little bright spot that I see in the Northwest. It's a program called LifeWise. Now, I don't have any tie to this. I just know that I've read about the program, and I think it's great. A growing Christian program. It's in the public schools, and I think that's a good move. I mean, there are people, I don't blame you at all if you've pulled your kids out of the public schools. But there are going to be kids who are trapped in the public schools, trapped by their parents' circumstances and for other reasons where parents don't have the time, money, or resources to pull your kids out of the public schools. So this program called LifeWise is a growing education program for public school students gaining traction around the Northwest. And apparently there are people out there who don't like the idea that kids might be pulled out of class so they can get just a little bit of religious education instruction in the public schools. I think it makes all kinds of sense to do it, and the Supreme Court has made it possible for programs like LifeWise to exist, and that ruling came almost 75 years ago. Glad to be with you. Glad to take your calls. You're listening to the Lars Larsen Show and the Radio Northwest Network.
The Lars Larsen Show. FM News 101.
Seconds will be on the air.
Lars. This is the Lars Larsen Show.
President Trump is one fat-ass president. He secured the border at a level we've never seen before.
Honestly provocative talk with Lars Larsen.
For our country and for our children, the best is yet to come.
Broadcasting across the Pacific Northwest and covering Oregon, Washington, and Idaho on the Radio Northwest Network.
Lars.
And now.
He is an existential threat to democracy.
Here's your host.
Quiet, please.
Lars Larsen.
Welcome back to the Lars Larsen Show. It's a pleasure to be with you. I'm glad to get to your phone calls and emails. We talk about the issues of the Pacific Northwest, and we endeavor to serve the states of the Pacific Northwest. Northwest. That's Oregon, Washington, and Idaho with the Radio Northwest Network. We have for about 30 years. So here's the question I want to consider now. What exactly are sixth graders being taught about sex in the government schools? One woman spent nearly a year digging through the curriculum. Wait until you hear what she found out. On that note, it is a pleasure to welcome to the program Debbie Allison, who is former court-appointed special advocate, ACASA, and has spent nearly a year reviewing Oregon's sixth grade My Future, My Choice curriculum. Ms. Allison, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, Lars. I appreciate it, getting this information out to a voice that's louder than ours could ever think of being. So I just want to thank you. You mentioned the title, My Future, My Choice. We concentrated as a group on Lesson 4 and Lesson 6, and they're titled SOGIE, and that stands for S-O-G-I-E, stands for Sexual Orientation, Gender Identity, and Expression. Most of my concern is parental transparency. There is none. And one of the questionnaires...
By that you mean parental transparency, meaning are the parents being told what it is that their kids are being taught in the classroom?
No, this curriculum is 519 pages long, 291 slides, and 9 videos. Parents don't have time to go through that. And if they aren't learning by word of mouth, they don't know. So we need to get this out there.
So what is in this curriculum that parents would find objectionable as material to put in front of their 11 or 12-year-old son or daughter?
Well, questionnaires that are being given to them that the state has published no data. They don't even measure it. So there's no comprehensive check, no mental developmental assessment, no reporting on confusion or misunderstanding, analysis or whether 11 and 12-year-olds even recognize the terms used. And one of the questionnaires was on gender identity. And they were asking questions like, "This is if you're two-spirited, you are American Indian or Alaska Native." And it goes down the line, are you girl or woman, boy or man, demi-girl, demi-boy, non-binary, gender fluid, gender queer, are you questioning? And then they ask, are you transgender, yes or no, I'm not sure. I don't know what this question is asking, or I prefer not to answer. And then regarding the sexual orientation, they ask these questions. Are you straight, lesbian, gay, bisexual, pansexual, asexual, or aromantic, queer, or questioning? Or does something else fit better? Please tell us more.
And all of this is being asked of 11 and 12-year-old boys and girls?
Yes, and Lesson 6 is highly explicit sexual instruction. They go through the types of sex: vaginal sex, anal sex, oral sex, manual sex. As far as oral sex, they go even as far as teaching them how to put a dental dam in.
Wow.
And I'm sorry, but this is, it's grooming and pedophilia at its best. And it's pornography in words.
Now, when you've looked at this, though, Debbie, when you go to officials like those people who are sitting on, say, a school board, are they aware of what's being put in front of kids?
Oh, yes. We did a presentation in front of the man who okayed the curriculum, the woman who wrote the curriculum, and she's from the Oregon Health Department. The Oregon Health Department wrote this curriculum, and they were fine with it. And like you said, being a court-appointed ACASA for sexually abused children, they have no idea what can happen after you've tantalized these sixth graders with sex. I'm just telling you, I know what could happen. They could go home and do it with, you know, their younger siblings.
And tell me this, does Oregon provide an opt-out so parents can say, I don't want my kids involved in this?
As long as they know what they're opting out of.
Oh, so they have to know what it is that they want to opt out of to be able to get out
of it. Absolutely. Yes. Yes, they can opt out of this program, and it's per the Supreme Court ruling. They have the right to opt out, but they have to know what they're opting out of. And I'm sorry, but if they even opt out, there's others who were in, and children talk. There's going to be so much misinformation going around with sixth graders, and some of them I've heard some of them have just thrown up in the class, and some of them are just laughing, and some of them are just tantalized by it.
No doubt. So how do we fix all this? I mean, it sounds like the kind of thing that we ought to strip out of the curriculum altogether, because it doesn't sound like it's something that most 11 and 12-year-olds need to know. Or is that the wrong way to approach it?
Seriously, we don't know how. I mean, we have sent letters to 48 of our churches in Bend. We have talked to the school board. We presented to just the people that I just told you about, the person who wrote the curriculum and the person who okayed the curriculum. We don't know. It's almost like they are winning. And I'm just encouraged. I've just been working so hard to even stop this. But like you said, how do we stop it?
I guess one of the ways to do that is there a place where my audience, members of my audience, can go online and see what you've put together so they can then take that and go to their local school district, to the school board meetings, and say, is this what you're putting in front of kids? And if so, why? Justify why you're doing it and explain to us why you're doing this. And if the school board doesn't know, then the school board needs to find out. Is there a way my audience can access this info?
Absolutely, but the school board only gave us 2 minutes to talk.
2 minutes.
So I'll give you the website. It's www.oregon.gov/ODHS/myfuturemychoice/pages.
I'll tell you what, Debbie,
curriculum.
Nobody is going to be able to remember that. We're going to put that link up on my website
Thank you. That
parents can go to that. And then they can take a look at what's being offered and the fact that it's being defined not by educators, but by the Oregon Health Department, and then be able to go to their school board and say, explain this. And if you can't explain it, then tell us why you're doing it.
Right. And the lessons to look at are lesson four and lesson six, because those are the ones that are on the sexual orientation and the gender identity expression. So they wouldn't have to go through the whole curriculum.
No, 4 and 6. Well, it sounds like this is the way that most people can approach it. At least they've got a way to go to their local school authorities and say, number one, are you teaching this to our kids? Number two, explain to me why this is necessary or desirable to teach to our kids. Number three, is it grooming our kids for other kinds of things that are not going to be good for our kids? And if you can't explain that, then take it out of the classroom. Debbie, thank you very much. That's Debbie Allison, a former court-appointed special advocate who spent a year reviewing Oregon's sixth-grade curriculum, My Future, My Choice. We'll put that link up on the website. A parking lot in
This is your home for honestly provocative talk radio. The truth every day. Now, back to the Lars Larson Show.
Hey, welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I'm glad to get to your phone calls and emails. Imagine this. The state of Washington decided that if you go on strike, that you are allowed to collect unemployment without going out to look for another job. Should taxpayers be paying people who choose not to work, and including union members who choose not to work? Because that's how the strikes happen. You don't see strikes that are organized by just any other group of workers. This is union workers only. And when striking workers get unemployment insurance benefits in Washington state, they are now expected to search for work. So imagine how little sense that makes. Let me dig into that in just a moment. First, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I'm glad to get to your phone calls and emails at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. And our poll on X today, should welfare recipients be allowed to spend taxpayer-funded benefits on whatever they want? Now, if you say, well, Lars, those EBT cards, isn't that just food stamps? No, it's not. It's both food stamps and what is known as TANF, or Temporary Aid to Needy Families, what we used to call the dole or welfare. And what have people been spending it on? They spend it on all kinds of things. Anything you can buy with cash can be bought with TANF, because TANF is a cash benefit. It's not like food stamps that, at least in theory, has to be spent on food. So What's happened? Florida, state of Florida, has become the first state in America to ban the use of cash assistance benefits loaded onto EBT cards to pay for things like tattoos or theme park tickets or video games or vaping products or other items that are not generally considered, quote, basic needs. Now, the Trump administration is telling other states, we'd like to see you emulate the state of Florida. Now, Florida is the first state to do this. So imagine this. If you thought that when somebody was on welfare, you say, well, that's pretty tough. If you're on welfare, that means you don't have enough money. You're not working a job. You're not making a regular paycheck. So society, through the U.S. government, is going to help you out in paying your bills. And then you find out that people are often using those monies from the cash benefits to pay for things like tattoos and theme park tickets. Does that make any sense? And should the welfare recipients be allowed to spend taxpayer-funded benefits on whatever they want? My answer to that would be no. You can answer the question any way you like. Now, yesterday's question, are delivery and service folks getting too pushy when it comes to tips? 93% of you said yes, and only 7% of you said no to that question. Glad to get your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. And by the way, one liberal Oregon county just got caught scoring homeless housing by race and sexual orientation. And now Multnomah County is having to change the way that it does business. What have they been doing up till now? They have been asking questions of people who are applying for help in getting free housing from the government. Free meaning the taxpayers are going to pay the bill. And what have they been asking about? They have deleted three questions that had to do with a person's race, a person's sexual orientation, and a person's preferred language. Now, why would they ask those questions? Well, here's what they've been doing. The county spokesperson, Julia Combs, says to ensure total compliance with shifting guidance and legal interpretation from the federal government, the Homeless Services Department is changing the access scoring system that it uses to prioritize households for certain kinds of services, namely supportive housing. So what are they doing? Well, they're asking people, what race are you? What is your preferred language? Is it English? Is it Spanish? Is it something else? What is your sexual preference? And how do they use that information? They use it to put you either higher on the list or lower on the list. You know how on this show we always tell you that naysayers go to the head of the line? That means if you call the show and you say to Joel or to Mackenzie, you say, I'm a naysayer, I disagree. You always go to the head of the line. How do you get farther up the line if you go to, say, Multnomah County and say, I'd like to have somebody else pay for some of my housing costs? And they say, well, who are you? And you give a name, you give a date of birth, maybe you give a Social Security number. But then they ask you, well, what race are you? And if you were to ask, well, hold on a second, what difference does it make what race I am? The difference it makes is you get farther up the line toward free housing if you tell them you're black or Hispanic. You get farther up the line if you tell them that your sexual preference is gay or lesbian or transgender. You get farther up the line in all those cases. Applicants are given a score of 1 to 3 points for their responses to a selection of 42 questions on a survey that Multnomah County has used. So Multnomah County has been determining that if you are gay, if you are lesbian, if you are transgender, if you are black or Hispanic, if you are, and they go right down that list, and it's going to make a difference whether or not you get higher or lower on the list. Well, guess what? The U.S. Department of Justice has said that Multnomah County can't use those things. And why? Because federal law says you can't discriminate against people or in favor of people because of their skin color. You can't discriminate against them because of their sexual preference. You're not allowed to do that. Why would anybody have ever thought they were allowed to do that? And then you've got this issue. Striking workers in Washington state are told you can apply for unemployment benefits. And now the state of Washington has been warned by the Federal Department of Labor that if you don't have people looking for jobs, they're not entitled to collect unemployment benefits. The U.S. Department of Labor has warned the Employment Security Department in Washington State that its current work search rule is out of conformity with federal law and must be immediately remedied. Why? Because if you are going to collect unemployment benefits, you have to have lost your job. Striking workers have not lost their jobs. They fully expect to go back to the job they were in before they went on strike. And striking workers don't go out and look for other work. Why? Because they don't need to find other work. They already have a job they're going back to when the strike ends. So the Employment Security Department, that's the state agency, has called for emergency rulemaking so that Washington State can quit getting this wrong and not lose any money. They want that Washington, D.C. money, and they understand if you allow people to take unemployment and they're not truly unemployed, then you're breaking the law and you're going to lose all that federal cash. Back in a moment, you're listening to The Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network.
The Lars Larson Show. Portland's News. Missed the Lars Larson Show today? Find Lars's thoughts and get the podcast right now at LarsLarson.com. Now, here's Lars Larson.
Hey, welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. We've been told all along that CO2 is the driving force behind global warming. But what if scientists have been underestimating the sun's role all along? Two physicists say the numbers may be way off. And to get a view on that, I've called on our favorite global warming debunker, and that's Chuck Weiss, meteorologist and a retired commercial airline pilot. How you doing, Chuck?
Very good, Lars. Very good.
So you saw this development. It involves two physicists by the name of Willie Soon and Jonathan Kohler. Tell me about them and tell me about the development just recently that may change how we've viewed some of these claims about global warming.
Yeah, I'm really excited about the Soon and Kohler paper. It's not been released yet. It's under review. But basically, I have had a chance to look at it. And basically, what these guys did is that they took all the carbon records. They're talking about carbon 13. There's actually three types of carbon. There's a 14, 13, and 12. But the 14 and 13s are much less abundant, and they can be used as tracers to how the atmosphere is responding to carbon input and output between the biosphere and the oceans and land. They took the 13 data, and they took it from the entire records. They got Barrow, Alaska, Mauna Loa, South Pole, and the Caribbean Scleral Sponge record, which goes back 500 years. And they did the Keeling computations on those, and they, when they tied it all together mathematically, and I wish I could talk about the math, but it's kind of hard to do that over the phone, but they tied everything together, and the result of the conclusion in the paper is that human CO2, in other words, the human emissions of CO2 from carbon or from fossil fuel combustion and respiration are limited and bound to no more than 4% of the increase since the Industrial Revolution. That's about 5 parts per million out of the 130 part per million increase. That's astounding.
Wow.
Now, Ed Berry did the same thing in a different way. He used carbon 14, and in his concluding remarks, papers he wrote, he restricted the human component to about, an upper bound of 33 and a lower of 8, and the mean is about 20. So we've got the Soon paper saying 5 parts per million increase owing humans, and Barry's work said about 20. Now that's significant because the IPCC has always claimed that we are 100% responsible for all of the increases in atmospheric CO2 since the start of the Industrial Revolution. And I've always complained about that because when they have reached that conclusion, they did so without considering any input at all from nature's carbon cycle, which is yearly, and 22.5 times human emissions. You can't assume that's going to be steady when we know that the outgassing from the oceans and the land are a temperature-dependent function, and the Earth has warmed some since the start of the satellite record. In fact, it's warmed quite a bit since the last little ice age a couple of hundred years ago. So these are significant findings to all that, and they basically dump all over this idea that CO2 is responsible for much of anything. And we can go into other arguments about its radiative effects, which I won't take the time to do here. I think we've already discussed a lot of that. Yeah. But they also found out in a lot of this research that some of the other papers that were written, and I've talked about the decline in albedo, which led to the warming we've experienced, they admitted it was 4.42 watts on a square meter, and I came up with, or actually 4.3, and I came up with 4.42 when I explained the warming due to the decrease of in the albedo of 1.3%. Yep. And then all of a sudden they changed that number and said, well, no, it's 0.7. But they never showed any mathematics as to how they came up with that. So it's kind of like cheating. But anyway, it all ties together and basically says, you know, the slowly warming climate we've experienced has led to the outgassing of CO2 from the oceans and the land. Right. And the natural carbon cycle is what drives all of this. Humans have very little to do with any of it. It really falsifies a lot of this stuff that's been claimed by the IPCC.
I mean, doesn't it suggest that humans have been a bit arrogant to say, well, whatever it is that's happening in our climate, it must be all our fault because we're the most important factor on planet Earth. And what this Soon and Kohler paper is suggesting is, now, you're 5 points out of what, 135 parts per million? Five of them are due to human activity, and the rest of it is other activity?
Yeah, the rest of it's human, rest of it's natural, the natural carbon cycle, which goes up and down. You know, they made this assumption that, that nothing goes in nature beyond 280 parts per million because of ice core records, and those are frittered with a lot of problems. And the resolution in those is not nearly good enough to be able to see spikes that may very well have happened in the Earth's past climate. But they ignore all that, and that's how they're trying to get away with saying, well, we know that if the CO2 concentration in the atmosphere went over 280 parts per million, which is pre-industrial, that we had to bend the cause of this. And so what they do is they measure the amount of CO2 emitted by humans, and then they see that, well, we only see half of this showing up in the atmosphere, so we know the oceans and land are a net sink. That's a gross oversimplification when you ignore nature's input and output, which is what they did because of those ice core records. So that screws up all of their calculations as far as I'm concerned. And these guys coming along now, like Soon and Kohler, and also Ed Berry, and there's a few other papers that were written too, are basically saying, no, you guys are completely wrong about this. So unless somebody can prove the mathematics in the Soon-Kohler paper is wrong, that's got to stand because they used all the records. Well, and some of these go back over 500 years.
And Chuck, if that's the case, then isn't the IPCC going to have to change some of its other more general conclusions, which is, number one, we've got, you know, we have a global warming that's going on. It is mostly the fault of human beings, and it can only be corrected by human beings changing our activities, and that means holding back on all use of energy on the whole planet.
That's right. The climate models use the inputs and make assumptions that they feed into it. And they're saying humans caused all the increase, therefore the output from the climate model, which is wrong anyway, but they're saying because of the output of the climate model, we've got to take all these ridiculous reduction programs in CO2. The Oregon is a disaster with this. I mean, everything the Oregon Environmental Council and the Oregon legislature have done is a disaster. It'll make no difference to atmospheric CO2 concentrations, the weather, or the climate. None of it. It's a fraud.
Well, and Chuck, hasn't it done that worldwide? That you've got literally trillions of dollars that have been sunk into things like wind and solar, all of it justified by the IPCC science that turns out to be wrong.
Yes, that's exactly right. They've destroyed economies worldwide. Germany is probably the worst example of it.
Yep.
But unfortunately, states like Oregon, California, and Washington, they're all following suit, and they don't care what anybody else thinks. They just go about their business and say, we don't care if you like this or not. We're going to shove carbon sequestration on you, carbon cap and trade. The cost of all your energy is going to go through the roof, and too bad if you don't like it. We're safe.
And unbelievable. That is Chuck Weiss, the meteorologist and my favorite global warming debunker. You got the Lars Larson Show. Estate nearly half.
Lars Larson wants to hear from you, even if you disagree. Naysayers get to cut the line at 866-HEY-LARS. Now, here's Lars Larson.
Hey, welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you on a Tuesday. Always glad to get you your phone calls at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. And our poll on X today. We put up a brand new poll question every day. Should welfare recipients be allowed to spend taxpayer-funded benefits on anything they want to spend the money on? Florida has just become the first state to impose new limits on how cash welfare benefits are spent. Now, understand, when you see that EBT card, most of us will see an EBT card on occasion at the grocery store. So you're standing in line behind somebody who uses an EBT card. There are many people who think, well, those EBT cards, all they have on them is food stamps. Well, they have food stamps, but they also have something called TANF, which is Temporary Aid to Needy Families. Food stamps can only be spent on foodstuffs and only on certain kinds of food, whereas cash benefits can be spent on anything. I get this call or emails all the time from people saying, why did I see somebody buy a pack of cigarettes or buy some beer with their EBT card? And the answer is because their EBT card contains not only SNAP, which is otherwise referred to as food stamps, but also it includes TANF, Temporary Aid to Needy Families, the fancy terminology for what we used to call welfare. Well, people spend that money on all kinds of crazy stuff, and Florida figured that out. So, Florida has now put limits on how welfare cash can be spent, and they have blocked recipients from using their cash benefits on their EBT cards for things like, believe it or not, tattoos, or theme park tickets, or video games, or vaping products that are not considered basic needs. Now, the Trump administration is encouraging other states to emulate what Florida is doing, and I think that's a great idea. So the way we frame the question today, should welfare recipients be allowed to spend taxpayer-funded benefits on whatever they want, like tattoos and theme park tickets, or only on those things that are considered parts of basic needs? I would say no. They should not be allowed to spend it on whatever they want. That's my answer on the poll question. You can find the poll question at Lars Larson Show and at LarsLarson.com. And yesterday's poll question, are delivery and service folks getting too pushy when it comes to tips? 93% of you agreed with me and said yes, they are. And only 7% of you said no to that question. Glad to get your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. And boy, did I get a stack of emails. Consider this. Somebody just wrote in about Chuck Weiss's commentary on climate change and that brand new report that suggests human beings are only a part of this. Climate change is the giant mutant star goat that the Douglas Adams, I think that's Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, tried to warn us about. And I think that's probably absolutely right. Oh, and then let's see. Oh, about all striking workers. All striking workers should be immediately fired and arrested. Federal law declares that all international disruptions of the workplace are illegal. Therefore, all strikes are illegal because it was designed to be an intentional disruption of the workplace. I'm not sure that that actually holds together. In the United States, you have a right to organize as workers. You have a right to be represented by a labor union. I don't necessarily agree with labor unions, but you do have the right to be represented by a labor union. And if you are, yes, they can get together and decide to strike. Is it legal for Washington State teachers to strike, which they plan to do in Seattle tomorrow? And the answer is no. It's not legal. It's a violation of law. The problem is that there's no enforcement mechanism to be able to hold them to the law that says you're not allowed to strike. But I will tell you this. Shame on the Seattle teachers and their unions if they decide to go on strike, because If they say we have no choice but to strike because our contract ran out yesterday on the 31st of August, that's not the case. The contract did run out yesterday on the 31st of August. Do you know what happens if they continue to negotiate? Then the contract continues to cover them and they get paid the same amount they were paid as of last year under last year's contract. And then when and if, and they probably will negotiate a new contract, then when they negotiate a new contract, then the contract will allow them to get retroactive pay raises. But if they decide to go out and hurt the kids by walking off the job and hurt families as well, I think this is exactly what the labor unions want to do. They want to hurt families. They want to hurt kids. They want to flex their muscles and say, don't deny us what we want. We demand a raise, and if you won't give it to us, then you're going to find your kids out of class, and that is a problem. So I just want to make sure that you're aware of what they could do. The teachers could stay on the job. Their paychecks would still come. When they get their raise negotiated, they'll get the raise in retroactive of style. And they will continue to educate the kids. If the teachers are going to tell parents and children, we're going to use your children as leverage to get our pay increase, then they are doing nothing more or less than extortion. And I think they ought to take responsibility for that. So consider what's going on there. Oh, and then this. Carrie writes in, Lars, how is it that these Democrats are not getting arrested for illegally interfering with federal law enforcement? Hasn't an illegal alien, conceptually speaking, done the same thing as a home invader who breaks into your home at 3 o'clock in the morning? Why isn't the National Guard on the border? And then about the man who called me earlier today, because I'd started out by complaining that the Portland Public Schools, they put out a video to welcome kids back to the new school year. And they put it out last week because school actually started in the Portland Public Schools last week. And one of the people on that video is a drag queen who goes by the professional name Poison Waters. And I said, this is inappropriate for somebody who's involved in cross-dressing or drag queen activities to be identified as an educator within the Portland Public Schools. Apparently not a teacher, but apparently advocates for the kids and that sort of thing. Cindy writes, Lars, I could only wish my father was so naive when I was in high school. I would have gotten away with a lot more. My dad was a principal. All he had to do was pretend he was getting a drink in the hallway, and he knew all the dirt that was going on. It is a fetish for men to dress up as women. Everybody seems to know it except your caller. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show.
The Lars Larson Show.
FM News 101.